September 23rd, 1966. It was Radhastami, the appearance day of Srimati Radharani, Lord Krishna's eternal consort. Prabhupada held his second initiation. Keith became Kirtanananda, Steve became Satswarupa, Bruce became Brahmananda, and Chuck became Achyutananda. It was another festive day with a fire sacrifice in Prabhupada's room and a big feast. Prabhupada lived amid the drug culture in a neighborhood where the young people were almost desperately attempting to alter their consciousness, whether by drugs or by some other means, whatever was available. Prabhupada assured them that they could easily achieve the higher consciousness they desired by chanting Hare Krishna. It was inevitable that in explaining Krishna consciousness, he would make allusions to the drug experience, even if only to show that the two were contrary paths. He was familiar already with Indian sadhus who took ganja and hashish on the plea of aiding their meditations. And even before he had left India, hippie tourists had become a familiar sight on the streets of Delhi. The hippies liked India because of the cultural mystique and easy access to drugs. They would meet their Indian counterparts who assured them that taking hashish was spiritual, and then they would return to America and perpetrate their misconceptions of Indian spiritual culture. It was the way of life. The local head shops carried a full line of paraphernalia: marijuana, LSD, peyote, cocaine, and hard drugs like heroin and barbiturates were easily purchased on the streets and in the parks. Underground newspapers reported important news on the drug scene, featured a cartoon character named Captain Hyde, and ran crossword puzzles that only a seasoned head could answer. Head means someone who took drugs. Prabhupada had to teach that Krishna consciousness was beyond the revered LSD trip. Do you think taking LSD can produce ecstasy and higher consciousness? He once asked his storefront audience. Then just imagine a room full of LSD. Krishna consciousness is like that. People would regularly come in and ask Swamiji's disciples, "Do you get high from this?" And the devotees would answer, "Oh yes, you can get high just by chanting. Why don't you try it?" Greg Sharp, Brahmananda's brother, hadn't tried LSD, but he wanted higher consciousness, so he decided to try the chanting. Greg, "I was 18. Everyone at the storefront had taken LSD, and I thought maybe I should too, because I wanted to feel like part of the crowd. So I asked Umapati, 'Hey Umapati, do you think I should try LSD? Because I don't know what you guys are talking about.' He said, "No, that Swamiji said you didn't need LSD. I never did take it, so I guess it was okay." I agree, but have you ever heard of LSD? It's a psychedelic drug that comes like a pill, and if you take it, you can get religious ecstasies. Do you think this can help my spiritual life? Prabhupada, "You don't need to take anything for your spiritual life. Your spiritual life is already here. Had anyone else said such a thing, Hayagriva would never have agreed with him. But because Swamiji seemed so absolutely positive, therefore there was no question of not agreeing." Satsvarupa, "I knew Swamiji was in a state of exalted consciousness, and I was hoping that somehow he could teach that process to me. In the privacy of his room, I asked him, 'Is there a spiritual advancement that you can make from which you won't fall back?' By his answer, 'Yes,' I was convinced that my own attempts to be spiritual on LSD, only to fall down later, could be replaced by a total spiritual life, such as Swamiji had. I could see that he was convinced, and then I was convinced." Greg, "LSD was like the spiritual drug of the times, and Swamiji was the only one who dared to speak out against it, saying it was nonsense. I think that was the first battle he had to conquer in trying to promote his movement on the Lower East Side. Even those who came regularly to the storefront thought that LSD was good." Everyone wants some. We want some consciousness that's beyond what we're used to. We're used to this habitual thing that we wake up to every morning, and it's the same, you know, the same old, and another day, you know, another day. What are you doing? How are you doing? And just hanging in there. And, you know, life becomes very routine. And your consciousness is very routine. You go home, watch the same television shows, or go on the computer, you say the same thing. Yeah, it's very routine. So people have an idea that there must be something more than this. And of course, they're right. There is something a lot more than this mundane consciousness that we're used to. We're sort of imprisoned in this. When part of the imprisonment of being in the material world is that you're bound to this consciousness, which is not very elevated. It's very, you're so limited in your thoughts and your memory. Your intelligence is so limited. Everything is very, very restricted and limited in material consciousness and routine. So people think, "I want more," and that's natural. Because we're pure spirit soul, we're part and parcel of Krishna, and we're meant to be much more conscious and much more Krishna conscious, which includes everything. So that's our eternal nature. So why not want that? But there's an idea that you can see, expand your consciousness on LSD or something like that. But you always, of course, you always run the risk of going into realms that aren't very good and having very bad experiences. Sometimes that you don't come back from. And anyway, even if you do have some kind of spiritual realization from some drug, it lasts a few hours, and then after that, then you're back to where you were before. So Prabhupada had to combat that idea prevalent, and all his disciples were taking drugs, and or almost all. They're taking drugs, so Prabhupada had to counteract that. And he did. Just people were convinced, just like when you're with your spiritual master, you feel like, I don't know where he is right now, but he's in a place, he's somewhere where I'm not. He's in a world that is way far above where I am. And so that's, you know, that's an advanced Krishna consciousness or advanced devotional service. So people could understand that when Prabhupada said that you don't need any of these drugs to have a higher consciousness, you have to chant the names of God and you become purified. When he said that, they knew that he meant it and that he was in. He was experiencing something far beyond what they were experiencing. So they had faith and they stopped taking drugs. Of course, not everybody stopped taking drugs, but many devotees became very serious and got initiated and stopped doing all that stuff. So those are Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 9, Verse 18 and 19. Pretty long. I'll try to read it. Vrisha Mamasha Rosha Vesha Ravasa Vilasita Bru Kuti Sitapa Kutila Tangstra Ru Nikshanato Pati Payanaka Vadana Hantu Kame Vedam Mahata asam ati sam rabena vimunchanti tata utpatya papi asam dushtanam tena vasina vivrikna shirshnam galat shravantam asrig asavam atyushnam saha ganena nipi yati pana madha Viva lo chaishtaram swaparshadai saha jago nanarta cha vija hara cha shira kanduka lilaya. Alright, word for word, there's a lot. Brisham, very highly.
Very highly.
Amarsha. In intolerance of the offenses.
In intolerance of the offenses.
Rosha.
Rosha.
In anger.
In anger.
Avesha.
Avesha.
For absorption.
Absorption.
Rabhasa vilasita. Expanded by the force.
Expanded by the force.
Brukuti.
Brukuti.
Of her eyebrows. Vitapa.
Vitapa.
The branches.
The branches.
Kutila.
Kutila.
Curved.
Curved.
Dangstra.
Dangstra.
Teeth.
Teeth.
Aruna Ikshana.
Aruna Ikshana.
Of reddish eyes.
Of reddish eyes.
Atopa.
Atopa.
By the agitation.
By the agitation.
Ati.
Ati.
Very much.
Very much.
Vayanaka.
Vayanaka.
Fearful.
Fearful.
Vadana.
Vadana.
Having a face.
Having a face.
Antu kama.
Antu kama.
Desirous to destroy.
Desirous to destroy.
Eva.
Eva.
As if.
As if.
Idam.
Idam.
This universe.
This universe.
Maha-attahasam.
Maha-attahasam.
A greatly fearful laugh.
A greatly fearful
laugh.
Laugh.
Ati.
Ati.
Great.
Great.
Sangrambena.
Sangrambena.
Because of anger.
Because of anger.
Vimunchanti.
Vimunchanti.
Releasing. Tata.
Tata.
From that altar.
From that.
Utpatya,
utpatya,
coming forth,
coming forth.
Papiyasam,
papiyasam,
of all the sinful,
of all the sinful.
Dushtana,
dushtana,
great offenders,
great
tena eva asina,
tena eva asina,
by the same chopper,
by the same chopper.
Vivrikna,
vivrikna,
separated,
separated.
Shishna,
shishna,
whose heads,
heads.
Galat
from the neck,
Shravantam,
Shravantam,
oozing out,
oozing out.
Asrik Asavam,
Asrik Asavam,
the blood,
blood
compared to an intoxicating beverage,
compared to an intoxicating beverage.
Ati Ushnam,
Ati Ushnam,
very hot.
Saha,
with Ganena, her associates, Nipiya,
drinking,
Atipana,
from
drinking so much, Mada,
intoxication,
Vivala, overwhelmed,
Uchaitaram,
very loudly.
Swaparshadai,
her own associates,
Saha,
with Jago, sang, Nanarta,
danced,
Cha, also
Vijihara,
played, Cha,
also
Shirakanduka,
using the heads as balls.
Rilaya,
by sports.
Translation. Intolerant of the offenses committed, the infuriated goddess Kali flashed her eyes and displayed her fierce curved teeth. Her reddish eyes glowed and she displayed her fearsome features. She assumed a frightening body as if she were prepared to destroy the entire creation. Leaping violently from the altar, she immediately decapitated all the rogues and thieves with the very sword with which they had intended to kill Judd Barrett. She then began to drink the hot blood that flowed from the necks of the beheaded rogues and thieves, as if this blood were liquor. Indeed, she drank this intoxicant with her associates, who were witches and female demons. Becoming intoxicated with this blood, they all began to sing very loudly and dance, as though prepared to annihilate the entire universe. At the same time, they began to play with the heads of the rogues and thieves, tossing them about as if they were balls. Purport. It is evident from this verse that the devotees of Goddess Kali are not at all favored by her. It is Goddess Kali's work to kill and punish the demons. Goddess Kali, Durga, engages in decapitating many demons, dacoits, and other unwanted elements in society. Neglecting Krishna consciousness, foolish people try to satisfy the goddess by offering her many abominable things. But ultimately, when there is a little discrepancy in this worship, the goddess punishes the worshipper by taking his life. Demoniac people worship Goddess Kali to obtain some material benefit, but they are not excused of the sins performed in the name of worship. To sacrifice a man or animal before the deity is specifically prohibited. I'll read the next verse. There's no purport after that. Evam eva kalu mahar abhicharati krama kartsnyenatmane palati. When an envious person commits an offense before a great personality, he is always punished in the way mentioned above. Om Gyanturam Dasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Litam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's not very good to worship the demigods in general. Krishna preaches against it in the Bhagavad Gita. It says those, if you get some benefits from the demigods, they're temporary. And anyway, they come from me. It's like if you, the example is that if you get some benediction from, if you go to a government agent and you get some kind of award or something, some grant or something, the government agent is an agent, and he's not actually the one who gives the award. Grant, whatever it is, but is authorized from, in a monarchy, is ultimately authorized from the king, or anyway, is authorized by higher authority. So the demigods are compared like that, that they can't give anything of their own will. People approach them. Worshippers of demigods approach them for material benediction, and they may get their benediction either in this life or the next. It's not that anyone who approaches a demigod immediately gets whatever they ask for, although it happens. But there's certainly no guarantee that you ask to be rich, you'll immediately get money the next day. But anyway, there are recommendations in the Vedas to approach the demigods for this or that, or health or money or fame, whatever you want, you can approach a demigod. But Prabhupada says, at least in one place, that there are many recommendations throughout the Vedas for things other than pure devotional service, which is the goal of the Vedas. Krishna says that I'm the compiler of the Vedas, I'm the knower of Vedanta. It is by the Vedas, it is me who is to be known. So all the Vedas in general are like a gradual system which aim at a very specific point. It's not that the Vedas can be used in many different ways than people may think, especially in Kali Yuga, where there's very little understanding of anything, practically, especially spiritual knowledge. Even within India, it's very confusing. There's no very little awareness of the actual goal of the Vedas. As you say to most people, of course I never spent time in India, but I think that most people in India, if you ask them what's the goal of the Vedas, most of them would be hard-pressed to give the answer that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita or some that I am, that Krishna is the goal of the Vedas, or many of them may, even if they heard it, they may not accept it or to, reject it, because they want some material benefit and they don't take it beyond that. But there is a specific one-pointed goal of all the Vedas, which is to know Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And and even Srila Vyasadeva was condemned by Narada Muni. He said, "Well, I've compiled all these Vedic literatures and Vedas and everything. Why don't I feel satisfied?" And when he told him, Narada Muni told him, he said, "Well, yeah, you don't feel satisfied because you haven't compiled the literature which strictly and single-pointedly glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees and devotional service." So, and that was, and she, that was the motive or reason behind Srila Vyasadeva compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is of the Puranas, it's called the Maha Purana, the great Purana. And it's specifically directed at elevating people to pure devotional service, to Krishna consciousness. So, but there's a framework of the Vedas which is there for people in general, just to include them within the realm of Krishna consciousness. Like, it's not so many of these things like Kali Durga worship or worship of the other demigods or so many things. They're included within the realm of Krishna consciousness, but they're only good if they lead to the point of devotion to Krishna. In and of themselves, there's no intrinsic value. So they're meant for that. But still, at any one time, there's not a large percentage. There's a small percentage of the people who are practicing some kind of religious performance. The percentage of people who actually want only devotional service, who come to that point, it's a very small percentage. And with any intention we mostly come out of just curiosity, some innocence, some desire to learn something or see something different. And Krishna consciousness, the presentation of Prabhupada and the devotees, we see a Harinam, we get some book, we meet some devotees, we get some prasadam, and we say, "Well, I like this. This is nice. This is different than anything I've ever experienced before. I want to investigate this." So somehow or other, out of many thousands of men, or hardly one endeavors for perfection, and out of many thousands of them, hardly one knows me in truth. So somehow or other, we've come to the point of being one out of many, many, many thousands and millions of human beings who have come to Krishna for pure devotional service. And that's a very miraculous thing, very rare thing, is that we become accustomed to it and used to being here and used to associating with devotees, and we chant the Hare Krishna every day, and we worship the deities every day. So we can take it for granted after some time. We think that, well, and so, I mean, we should have the feeling that, well, this is my life, this is what I do, this is my life. Devotional service is my life. I do it every day. I've been doing it for a long time, and so that's good. But that can drift into sort of a little bit of a unhealthy consciousness also, where we sort of take it for granted and don't put the effort in that we did when we were new. And everything was new and exciting and wonderful. And of course, everything is still new and exciting and wonderful, because Krishna is ever fresh, and all devotional service to Krishna is ever fresh. And in the material world, life gets boring. But in Krishna, in Goloka Vrindavan, or in Vrindavan, it's not the gopis and coward boys are never like, oh boy, same thing today, going out to the forest to play with Krishna, take care of the cows, boring. You know, nobody ever thinks like that. And because everything, Krishna is the most exciting person, and the life with Krishna is a thrill at every moment. Every step is a dance, and every word is a song in Krishna, and not a mundane song, but a blissful spiritual song. So we should be careful and not take anything for granted, and not take it as this is what I do every day and same thing today. And devotees in general, we don't think like that, but I mean, it's not like devotees really get into that, but a little of that can creep in. And also in regards to new people coming to the temple, either for the first time or the first few times, or after a while, like a year is nothing to be coming to. It's something. It's very significant, but there is a very, 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 very beginning. And if we've been here for a long time, we take it a little for granted, and we don't so much transmit the excitement of Krishna consciousness to new people. We sort of expect them to have like unrealistic expectations of people, that they'll understand so many things so quickly, unreasonably quickly. Masha, she said that she was coming for like a year before anybody really talked to her or preached to her or told her much philosophy. But I mean, she was nice, she was sincere, and everybody liked her, but she said that nobody really preach to her. So that's a facet of Krishna consciousness that we have to maintain for sure, is to be careful to take care of newcomers. Of course, you can take that too far too, you know, say, new devotee. You know, when we used to have, used to be a lot of like college kids and everything coming here, and for a Sunday feast, you know, all the brahmacharis would sit down and preach to somebody during the Sunday feast, and it wasn't unusual for a brahmachari. He's there for a year or two or a few years, and they latch on to somebody and they're like, oh, I got this guy now, I'll preach to him, I'll get heavy with him. And I sometimes get like heavy with somebody who has never even been there before. And that's also bad. It's good to be enthusiastic, you have to be enthusiastic, you have to be dynamic as a preacher. As Prabhupada said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, that a preacher has to have life. a dead man can't preach. So we have to be enthusiastic and full of, you know, we have to be dynamic as preachers, but you can't, you got to be careful too. You can't give somebody, you have to be straightforward and direct, but you got to be careful not to give somebody too much, more than they can handle in the beginning, especially if you do it in like a heavy way, or the people won't understand that at all, it'll put them off, at least for a while, from pursuing Krishna consciousness. Not everybody. Some people will come, and somebody will preach to them a little inappropriately, but they'll be able to look beyond that and just keep coming, keep chanting, keep greeting. And they may be just a little disturbed, but many people won't like absolutely turn them off to Krishna consciousness. But that can happen too, at least for some time. Anyway, not sure how I got started on that, but the worship of demigods is not recommended, and especially if in the course of your worship you're sacrificing a human being, an animal, that's not recommended. It's the Prabhupada said to sacrifice a man or animal before the deity is specifically forbidden. There's so many places in the world where over the course of time we've heard about, like in the Mayas or the Incas or in many places in the world, they have like animal sacrifices and human sacrifices. They think that there's some thought that by sacrificing this living entity, even a human being, to God or to whatever they think of as the higher power, the great spirit, or whatever they think of, they think somehow that will be pleasing, and they'll get some benediction in return. But this is a very, religion in the mode of ignorance. This is you can't get much more religion in the mode of ignorance than that. So, but Kali Yuga, people do anything. People are willing to do anything. Even in the name of worshiping God, people are prepared to do just anything. So this is Kali Yuga. So the worship of, and specifically, not even any man, but they were prepared to sacrifice a great devotee before Goddess Kali. Goddess Kali didn't like that at all. And she jumped out of the deity form with all her witches and her associates, witches and female demons, and she cut off all their heads, and they were dancing around like, to destroy the creation, and singing and drinking the blood out of the dance. This is pretty graphic. And then the next verse: when an envious person commits an offense before a great personality, he is always punished in the way mentioned above. So, we're always warned against committing offenses to devotees. Anybody, we shouldn't offend anybody, but especially devotees we shouldn't offend. Okay, stop there. Any questions or comments?
Question. I don't know if you remember, it was also in Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, another human sacrifice by the father promised to sacrifice, I think it was his son or something, I don't know what was the reason. And then when he was supposed to be perform sacrifice, instead of son, they took some slave or some slave actually, I think a slave, and then the slave...
I don't know where that is.
No?
I don't remember that. I'd have to see that. I can't remember that.
I remember how once he went to a court Shiva, he started to sacrifice himself. You remember? He decided to cut off his head.
Yeah, I'd have to see that. If you can find that.
And the Bible also.
And the Bible, they got
killed
your
son.
Yeah, right. That's, but it's only told us not to. Right. Just before he was ready to do it. Yeah, that's a troubling story. I know.
Yeah, but
last
moment.
Yeah, no. He said no, you don't have to do it. But he was ready to do it. Yeah. All right, I'm going to Srila Prabhupada. Om Vishnu Padme Hum.